God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot, the courage to change the things. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name. Everyone has the ability to unmute. Please feel free to say hello. Anybody in the first 30 days?
My name is Austin. I'm an alcoholic. Today is day 15.
Austin, welcome back. Glad you're here, brother.
Sorry, I missed last week.
It's all good. All right. Anybody else?
I'm Sharon. This is my second day.
Sharon, welcome. Lovely.
Why can't I have my picture up here?
That would be up to you. You could show your video. That's you control that.
I don't know how to do that.
Okay. Well, welcome. We're glad you're here. And you can send a chat to any of the ladies in the room. Actually, the chat's open to everyone at this point. I'm going to shut that down to host and co-host only. There are some female co-hosts. If you would like to reach out and ask for a number, they'd be happy to provide that. Welcome. Anybody else?
Thank you.
First 30 days? All righty then. All right. And I'm going to go ahead and share the preamble. And Leanne, would you read that for us?
Sure, I'd be happy to. My name's Leanne. I'm an alcoholic. AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you. All right, the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight, this is the last in the 13-week series on step 12. And please help me welcome our panel. We've got Sammy G from Richmond, Virginia, and Brian from Harrisburg coming to share tonight. So I'm not going to read you to death. I'll read the first paragraph, and then the panel will take turns sharing for a few minutes on each reading. And that's how the meeting's going to go, I think. That's how it usually goes. We'll see if it goes that way. So we're going to start on page 96. Suppose now you are making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. And on page 98, it is not a matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give that often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a spiritual plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God. And I believe Brian won the toss prior to the kickoff and will lead us. Brian, it's good to see you, brother.
Good to be here. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Brian. And it's good to be here sober tonight. And actually, Sammy won the toss, but in the current NFL trend, she decided to defer. And so I got to go first. But it's good to be here sober tonight. And thank you. Thanks for asking me. I guess, as I was thinking about this, even just reading the reading, it would probably helpful for me at least to orient myself about kind of where I am when I hit this piece of it. And so what has happened for someone at this place, and I particularly want to welcome our new folks, because I will tell you, so my sobriety date is June 27th of 1984. I was 19 years old when I got sober, and I have had a life that is completely different than the one I was otherwise doomed to live. And that is a gift that is available for anyone who's willing to accept it. So if you have alcoholism, or if you're trying to figure out whether you have alcoholism, you're in the right place, and hopefully we can help you do that. Because if you do have it, the good news is we have a solution to it. And that was the sort of the starting place, almost the beginning for me, was to understand what was wrong with me, because I really didn't understand that. It seemed like a string of bad luck. It seemed like, you know, the wrong parents, the wrong house, the wrong everything. And there was drinking, but that seemed like the only way to survive. And when I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous, it was not my idea. And I didn't wake up and say, geez, I hope I'll get sober. I had no intention of quitting drinking when I walked into my first AA meeting. I didn't even know people didn't drink in AA. And so, but what people did here was a version of exactly what gets described in this chapter, which is they welcomed me, they helped me. They didn't do what everybody else had been doing. Loving people who loved me, cared about me, wanted the best for me, spent a lot of time telling me what I was doing wrong and what I should do differently. And they meant really well. It just didn't help me. In AA, people did the opposite. They told me what was wrong with them and what they had done in response to that understanding, and explained to me what their lives had looked like, what the world looked like to them, what happened inside of them. And when I listened to them, I could see that what they were describing about their lives was exactly what had happened, that there was a part of me that would get so twisted. Our big book talks about it as being restless, irritable, and discontent. And I get to that place and what clicked. It's like a switch went on. And the switch that my non-alcoholic wife has that says done, I don't have that one. Mine only goes one way, which is more. And I could see that about myself. I could see that, and as I got a little clearer, I could remember that feeling. Like, I'm just going to do this. Then I'm just stopping here. Of course, you know, just a couple of drinks. And then something clicked, and it was like, I'll get there tomorrow. You know, assuming I'm home by then. But now I couldn't stop. And people helped me to see that, and then explained that this solution to me was complete abstinence from alcohol, and that if I did certain things, I could have what we described as a spiritual awakening, which I don't know what I really thought about that at first. I probably thought I would be there would be Moses and then Brian. So a burning bush somewhere, the Susquehanna River would part, or I was in Pittsburgh at the time. So maybe the Allegheny, and something like that. And that's not at all what it is. Instead I ended up going through this process of really getting connected with people, really getting connected with a power greater than myself, or a God as I understood God, cleaning up my whole past and having this different life going forward. And that's sort of where I end up now at this place in step 12, that having had that spirit as the result of having done those other steps, so the inventory, the amends, the prayer life, the decision that gets described in that reading, having done that, I continue to live that way, I get the gift of carrying that message to other people, which at first sounded like a burden. And I kind of thought, I'm glad you guys want to carry the message to other people, but I actually have a much better plan, which is I am going to come in, I'm going to get what I need so that I can go do what I want. And then I'll leave. And if God's will is for me to be happy, joyous, and free, I know exactly what happy, joyous, and free looks like. It's that job, that girl, that car. And the good thing is I stuck around long enough to learn that that was delusional. So this reading, this first paragraph, supposing you're making your second visit to a man. So in this is now carrying the message to somebody. We've met this person. We've assessed, made up my own assessment of whether does he sound like an alcoholic to me, or does she sound like an alcoholic? Yes, and sort of laid out the program. Again, laid out what I did, And then now I will admit, in 37 years, I've never met this man who fits the following two things. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. The guys I meet are the guys who tell you they were going to buy the book, but they left their wallet in the car. Or they were going to read the book, but like something really important had happened. And don't you understand why they didn't? So I'm much more accustomed to reading the book with people than having them read it and come to me. It's just been my experience. But the reminder that's in that next sentence, or the two pieces of it, that whoever he or she has done something and he or she has decided they're prepared to go through with the 12 steps, it's not my job to convince them. And I have made them. I have listened to people sometimes and I thought, well, you are so clearly alcoholic. How is it that only one of us sees that? And so now I want to make you understand that you're an alcoholic. It is a version of self will run riot. Because why do I want to do that? I want to do it because I'm in this conversation with you and I am so uncomfortable watching you, knowing where you're going. Because this just goes down. There's no like upside to drinking alcoholically. It just all trends downward. And I know that's coming. And I got used to get so uncomfortable that I would try to force people. Hey, God helped me get through that. And getting to that place of realizing, seeing that's the next layer of self-will and being relieved of it. Instead, getting to this place where I could be what's described there, having had the experience myself, having gone through the 12 steps myself, I could give the person practical advice about how to do it. And then if they, two things, if he wishes to make a decision, which I read 50 times probably before I understood that meant, oh, if he wants to take the third step, that's what that's saying. If he wishes to make a decision to turn his will and his life over to the care of God, let him or her know that I'm there to do it with them. There are a few things for me that have been more powerful in Alcoholics Anonymous than kneeling down with someone to say the third step prayer. That real sense that we are holding someone's hand, you know, trying to get them to God, as they understand it, which might be different than mine. But really that you're standing on the precipice of this whole new life. It's such an honor to do. And every time I've done it, it's always kind of chilling, but that I'm ready to do that. And if he wants to tell his story, in other words, wants somebody to listen to his or her fifth step, I'm ready to do that as well. But if they want to do it with someone else, they should, because it's not about me. It's about opening the door to people and letting them do the right things. And that idea, in that second paragraph, which I'll admit at various points in sobriety, I've struggled with, the burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. I can't even remember if we actually read this or I was just thinking about it. But if we didn't read it, then we're going to, I think, but we should if we don't. The only condition is that he trusts in God and clean house. Here's the mistake I've made sometimes. I suffered in my own way with alcoholism, but there were things that didn't happen to me. I never went to jail. I was never homeless. A lot of things. And so I could be very susceptible to the idea that people who had suffered economically or socially more than I did needed to get back up a leg before they could get sober. And I was really susceptible to that lie. And if I don't do my job, I'm helping them deal death because I am participating in their denial if I don't do that. And the only reason I don't do it is because I'm so uncomfortable. Again, back to self, whirlwind ride, don't know what that manifestation of self, that I act out of discomfort. But slowly but surely getting that lifted, the turning back to God, it comes back to this same thing, which was true for me. Unless I rely on God, trust God, clean house, help others, that's how I'll get sober. Other stuff, whatever that is going to line up behind it. And all the things that I thought were my problems, they were the consequences of my drinking. My problem was that I had alcohol. And until I addressed my problem, those symptoms of my problem or consequences of my problem were going to replicate. Jump to you, Sammy. So, and feel free to correct in any way you need to. So,
thank you, Brian. Yeah.
Thank you, Brian.
David, should we do the next set?
We can, if you want to comment on what we've read, you may. If you want me to just go ahead into the domestic problem, we can do that too.
Well, hi everybody, I'm Sammy and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 1st, 1989. And it's through people like you and a sponsor who love me enough until I could learn to love you and a God of my understanding. I think the first thing that I wanted to say is I love this saying. I found it. And it said, Dr. Young told Roland, Roland told Ebby, Ebby told Bill, Bill told Dr. Bob, thank God someone told me. I think that really sums up really about service, about having had the spirit result of the step, you know, having had that experience. I've had that experience, but when I first started sponsoring people, I was only a year sober. Back then, you know, you had to have a year sober. I mean, sponsor now with 3 months, maybe a week. But when I got sober, we started sponsoring when we had a year. The first thing I can tell you that is I have a sponsor. And another thing I think that's really important is that without you, there would be no me. And so when I went to a meeting, because that was the first thing that I did, you know, besides treatment, when I go to a meeting, I met you. And this was all, and I didn't know it then, but truly the act of God for me, because I went from, a real wretched of a woman. And the next morning when I woke up something, and so I came in warning what you had, really warning it. And really the desire was there. The willingness was there. So it says, and it says prior to this about the first thing we do is we have someone tell their story. As a sponsor, and I love sponsorship, I love helping others. It's the highlight of my life. I'm so glad that it says that it's really an important thing to do because I do love doing it. But as I let that person tell their story to me, and what I get out of that is I get that connection immediately. I think, David, you said that at the beginning, you know, do I find out if they're an alcoholic? You know, and I think sponsors sponsor differently. There's a pamphlet on sponsorship. It's a really good pamphlet. I was sponsored a certain way, and that's why I sponsor. And I certainly did what Brian said. There was no such thing as, read this and come back to me. It is so important for me to sit down and to read this with somebody else. Besides for them, it's amazing what I get out of it. Because over even, and I know there's new people here, but the best thing that you can do for yourself, and you don't even know it, is to grab onto someone and just do what they do. Because I didn't know how to live. I didn't know this was my design for living. And so grabbing onto someone else and doing what they do gave me, by doing these steps, what it did, doing the steps, is actually making me a sponsor. Those steps lifted me up and was able to pass on this. And that's what I did. And I can tell y'all, it was not pretty at first. I wasn't, you know, I stayed sober. I can just tell y'all that. Anytime the big book says, don't do something, I did it. If it says, do it, I did it. I came in with a lot of character defects and I tried to give them to you as best I could. And then the good news about it is, besides I stayed sober, to watch someone get sober to do that. And on the next page where he talked about, it's not a matter of giving that is the question, but how, when, and how to give. I didn't know any of that. I try to carry the message and the messenger. I did all that. I just did everything I could because for me, it was like a reflection. You know, you do good, I'll look good. You know, so that was the starting of my sponsorship. But I learned, I grew as these people, someone, when they ask you to be a sponsor, they're it's like putting their lives in your hands, you know, and that's the, I take it very seriously, you know, well, I take it as seriously as they do, but I do. And I have to remember, we're very sick people. We're not well. So when we come in, I love what he said at the end, and I'll end it with this, burn into the idea into the consciousness of every man that we can get well regardless of anyone. And for me, you know, I lost my family. I cried a lot about it. But the thing of it is if I kept practicing and putting my trust, and God's going to take care of me. And also you, because you became my family. I put my trust in that first, you know, because it was the last house on the block, you know, and I had nowhere else to go but to grab onto that. So I'm going to pass it right back to Brian for the next.
Thank you, Sammy. You guys are great. Don't worry about the time. We don't have to get through all the paragraphs.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
Everybody just, we're all good. We'll end the meeting on time, but other than that, we got it. We're going to continue on page 90. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put these principles into action at home. That is, if he's lucky enough to have a home. Though his family may be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. Brian?
So for me, I realized that this is such a powerful reminder, because I often joke that I really have that sort of three-part gift that I have the wisdom to identify what is wrong with you, the willingness to share it with you, and the commitment to stick with you until you change it and remind you about it. And so and all of those, again, back to that, you know, the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think, though. I always heard the extreme example of self-will. It was a long time really before I could really internally hear, though he usually doesn't think so. And I'm not a great quoter, but I think that you have the concept. And that those things are all manifestations of self. I remember in my first home group, if you said to someone who was new, how are you doing? Someone would invariably say, don't ask him, don't ask her, ask their husband, ask their wife, ask their kids, ask their sponsor. That's who can tell you how they're doing. And so it's one of those great gifts in AA, and it becomes a test, is how am I living at home? What does the 12th step look like in my house? And if I'm living that, then this message flows naturally. And if I'm not living that way, what will end up happening is that I will essentially try to justify my own behavior by glomming onto yours. And so, oh yeah, you think your wife's a pain, wait till you hear mine, you know, blah, 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 and that, or whatever it is. And that just spread illness as opposed to spreading the message that we're really trying to carry. And you know, these basic reminders of that divorce, separation, or strained relations. If there's not divorce or separation, I guarantee you there's strained relations if an alcoholic is involved. There is exactly zero chance that doesn't exist. The only thing is the alcoholic might not really know it. Because he or she might be so consumed with self that they don't even really understand what's happening with the people around them. It all seems fine. Why that's why you don't ask them, you ask their spouse. But that this is what we're doing here is actually a way of living. because I didn't see at first that AA and my life had much overlap. And I remember this really well. I'd met this young woman. So I'm, you know, I was new. I was really about as crazy can be when I was new. I mean, I was really ill. And I put down the drink without picking up the solution for a while. And what happens is, for people like me, we don't get better. We actually get a lot worse. We're just more functional at being terrible. And that was what was happening. And I met this young woman and we're talking, and I don't know, can't imagine what it is I said, but I said something that caused her to think I was in AA. But she was in AA. And so she was trying to do it very subtly. And she said, I was out near where you live. I was meeting this friend of mine, Bill Wilson. Do you know him? Mm. I'm thinking, Bill Wilson. I remember that. And I went to high school with this kid, Billy Wilson. I said, like, Billy Wilson, like kind of skinny, like a little short kid, nice. She's like, no, he's an older man. I'm thinking, no, I can't praise it. Then I would sit in AA meetings and people would talk about like Bill W. And I'd think, where did I hear that? But the problem was, what was happening in AA and what was happening in my life were completely unrelated to me. I wanted to be a good AA as long as I was in the AA meeting. And if it was an AA meeting that started at 8 o'clock, I timed my 7:59 and 30-second arrival and my 8 o'clock and 30-second departure well. So for that 61 minutes, I had to be a good AA. But the rest of the day I didn't have, because I had to live my life and this stuff is fluff. And how am I going to get mine if I don't live the way I need to live? And this message that people were giving me is I needed to put these principles into action at home. No matter what's going on. So if we're practicing these principles in all of our affairs, understandings about powerless, how about being honest? How about being helpful? How about acknowledging what I have done wrong and trying to make amends for it? Doing all of that in my home. And if I do that, my family life will be different and people around me will behave differently. And that has absolutely happened. I'll tell you this, and I'm like kind of choking up thinking about this. It just happened the other day. So my wife and I just celebrated our 28th wedding anniversary. And the real basics, we've never been separated. There's never been any violence. There's never been any infidelity. It's a really normal kind of, well, not normal in the alcoholic bounds of normal necessarily, but when you think about what a marriage could look like, I think it's that. And the other day, we have a 14-year-old daughter, and she did something very generous, and I was just talking to her about, you know, generosity and how that was a gift thing. And all of a sudden, my wife said, "Do you know who's the most generous person I know?" And I'm thinking, like, her sister or something. And she said, "It's Daddy." She said, "I can't tell you." She said, "I go to these, you know, the meetings he goes to. I go to," she said, "I cannot tell you how many people come and say, oh, your dad, your husband did this, your husband, he really helped me." And she said, "Over and over, people always say to me, thank you for like not badgering your husband about spending so much time in AA." The funny thing is, if you'd ask me, I would say my wife is more generous than I am. But that's probably because I know what I feel like inside, not what I look like, what I do. But you know, that gift. And then she said, "And it's made me more generous." She said, "Because I do things now that I never would have done, but for watching your dad." And that's what it looks like lived out. And I didn't even know that until she said. So that's what it actually looks like if I live it out. And so that's the message I want to convey to people, because I've had a great marriage and a great family and still do. Back to you, Sammy.
Oh, wow. That was so good, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
At the beginning of the book, on the forward, it talks about on page XX on 20, it says, it's talking about how AA grows, and in this, for there were two principal reasons: the large numbers of recoveries and reunited of homes. And how does that happen? I didn't have a home. I lived with my sponsor the first year, but I had to, the first thing that I learned, you know, I had to say please and thank you. I mean, simple little things like that. I started having, because I was never a kind person. I wasn't thoughtful. And so I practicing these principles was the first thing that I had to do with simple, basic things. You know, maybe the first one was keeping my mouth shut. That would have been the best one ever. But these things were so basic, is to be kind, be thoughtful, listen. We used to say that when I first got sober, we listen to learn and learn to listen. And so in my home that I was living, I had to learn these basic tools, you know, these basic principles by which we live by. And when I say that I had to learn them, I had to start practicing to think of others, practice by getting someone else a cup of coffee. I had to practice all these things. And and it says it in here. I lost where it said. What sponsorship has helped me do with many women is I've seen, you know, from my own experiences in my marriage, you know, and practicing these things in my marriage. Because I will tell you, I had such a good marriage. I had a good husband, and I had to learn how to live with somebody else. When I got married, I was 5 years sober and I was still borderline nuts. But, you know, when we got married, I had being with someone else because I had been alone for so many years. I had to learn to put these principles in my own home, you know, and I didn't do it well at first. I really didn't, because 38 years of doing it my way, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, I'm living with somebody. And but sponsoring other people and having talk with them, I think this is the best lesson for me. Watching other people, how they handle their situations, instead of just always telling someone, watch. I will tell you a quick little story. When I first met my husband, I was always a troublemaker. I was always getting, you know, my mouth always got me in trouble. You know, I was a gossiper. I, that's why I grew up, you know, just talking badly about other people. So when I first met my husband and I was going to meet his family, my sponsor said, Sammy, this is a really good time for you to start practicing keeping your mouth shut. And watch how other people treat each other, especially family members. Because my husband's family, they were so loving. I mean, I would sit back in awe, but I did that. I saw how they treated each other. I saw what they did. And I wanted that. I wanted that. And I think it's besides helping others by talking about the principles, by doing all that, watching people be has been one of my greatest teachers too. Not just, you know, going over things, and, you know, words say a lot, they do, but actions really speak louder. So I'll pass with that.
Oh, thank you both. We're going to continue on page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things that which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstance. Brian?
So, thanks. Thank you, Sam. That was really so well put, and just the gift we get. There's that line in the third step that says, it talks about, so we've made the decision, God's the employer, you know, we're the employee, God's the principal, we're the agents. And it describes this, that when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves. And then one of the most stinging things in the big book, our little plans and designs. Because I know you have little plans. I have grand plans. but this is that transformation being lived out. That this description and the first, it starts with that reminder that both I and the new person must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. I guess I had that, it's not an uncommon perception probably, but I had that perception that what would happen in AA was I would do this stuff when I decided I was going to do it. I had the idea that I would do this stuff and then I would be done. And I would kind of sail along very wise and spiritual and rich. And that I didn't have to do anything more. And I would always know the right thing to do. And I would, oh yes, bless you, my son, or whatever I would do. But it would be something that didn't involve continuous engagement with anything. First off, that's not true. Second, and more important, thank God that's true. Because that continual engagement in spiritual growth and carrying this message to other people and living out a life based on that has been so joyful that it really is, I mean, really, really alive and really present in the gift of the moment I get. And so the reminder in that is that I have to continue to walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress along with the person who is just starting out and along with the person who is in the middle somewhere and along with the person who has been walking it longer than I have, but that in some kind of strange way we're all standing right next to each other but in different places, and what that spiritual path looks like and what that growth continues to look like is far more than I ever would have imagined. So later in the big book, when it talks about that, you know, we abandon ourselves to God, that practice of really trying to abandon myself is the opposite of what I thought it was. I thought that was losing. Mm-hmm. And it really is, you know, that was, and it really is, that's the win, because the win is about getting free. And when I can be in that place, that's when I'm really free. And the promise that remarkable things will happen. Mm-hmm. And it's this, you know, when we look back, we realize the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have. The important piece of that for me is when we look back, that it's true, because looking forward, it's not always obvious to me that will be true. Experience has always borne out that, so, you know, one of my children has alcohol. I would not have, if I could have made the choice, will he have alcoholism? The answer would have been no, really, it would have been. But it's what his alcoholism did, the opportunities it created for me to become more reliant on God, the opportunities it created for me to expand what it's really like to love someone, to love them exactly as they are. To meet someone right where they're standing when they have no ability to move anywhere. But that's an unbelievable gift that we get in AA with alcoholics. And we are unique in our ability to do that. And can I take that gift and live it out? Because being self-centered by nature, if I get kind of spiritually off the beam, I'll think, yeah, great gift, God, thanks. How about a gift to pick stocks? That would be a better gift. How about if I could just pick the next Apple and Amazon right now? That Lord, I think, would make me happy, joyous, and free. Amen. But it wouldn't. That would make me something else, or it would make me nothing. It would change something about my life. But it wouldn't be what I've been given. And when I look back, I see all of that. And because I was better at loving him through active alcoholism, I'm better at loving everybody else around me. I'm more conscious of the extent of being powerless and at being powerless and how that's lived out. And I can convey that to people. I have that experience to share with people. And I would have changed it all if I hadn't put myself in God's hands.
And that idea that we will presently live in a new world, a wonderful world, no matter what our present circumstances, that there is always waiting. And there is always a gift, even if, and part of living in a new wonderful world, no matter what the circumstances are, I thought that meant your circumstance. Mm-hmm. That might or might not be true. But I will, and I will get to live in this. And something Sammy, you said, I don't know why this reminded me of it, but it's that sort of being different and how we are. I coached youth soccer for years, and when my daughter was young, she played on a team with a woman in my home group, daughter, and she was out one day and she saw my wife and our daughter together. So she came over to my wife and said, "You must be Brian's wife." And she said, "Yeah." And she said, "Oh, I just love your husband. He's really been helpful to me." And my wife came out and she said, "You know, in most places in the world, if a strange woman comes up to you in the mall and says, 'I love your husband,' it's really off-putting." She said, "But for you people, it's totally normal." And so I understood it. And that is really get to be available for people. And part of that ability to be that was through this stuff. I was trying to do the handoff and I think I muted myself too early.
Oh, thank you, Brian. Okay. I love this paragraph because it reminds me so much of, at the end of it says, live in a new and wonderful world. And I know there's some new people on tonight. And all these are promises, just to let you know. In the beginning of the book, it talks about we're going to be on new footing. We're going to establish a new way of living. You know, I couldn't imagine my life looking any other way. I couldn't imagine. But, you know, I think the most spiritual part of my body was my feet at the time, because my feet kept moving towards, you know, the meetings. My feet kept doing it. My head may have been somewhere else, but my feet were moving. But that's what this is all about. I wanted to be recreated. And that's a lot for a Jew to say, I'm going to tell you right now. I wanted to have that new sense of peace. You know, because I was not at peace at all with myself. But I think it's really important that I walk, you know, day by day and side by side with somebody. I'm telling you, I'm no better than anybody. I may have a little bit more time and some experience, but I will tell you, I think the most important thing for me in working with others is it's enlarging my spiritual life. And if I walk with someone and enlarge that life because I'm working with others, it's enlarging my heart. My heart gets filled. And there's a little example that I've been using lately because it just fits me. You know, when I eat, and I'm a glutton, I love food, you know, and I eat well, and I eat with purpose and fast. And when I'm finished, I don't feel so good. You know, I may even feel remorse and guilty and shameful the way how much I've eaten. So the things that I do, the result, but when I do something to enhance my spiritual life, the result is always good. That satisfaction I get for overeating, I get that. I get satisfaction of doing the next wrong thing, but the result is not so great. But when I enlarge that in my spiritual life, when I walk hand in hand with the spirit of the universe, you know, when I walk hand in hand with another woman who's on that same path, the results are always. And see, that to me is the life that I want. You know, I do like feeling good. I grant you that, you know, and that instant gratification, that first drink, you know, that first wonderful feelings that I used to get from all that, and then the remorse, the guilt, and the shame. But when I work with you, I walk away and my feet aren't even on the ground. I'm high. So I will follow the dictates of a higher power. And I presently live in a new and wonderful world. And that's all I have on that.
Ah, wonderful. We are nearing the end of our time. I'm just going to read the last two paragraphs and give you guys a couple more minutes each. Perfect. So let's go with on page 102. Your job is now to be at a place where you can be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. Page 103 says, after all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to, right?
Now, I am such a talker, and I know we're getting to the end. So, Sammy, do you want to go first just to make sure I don't consume all the time?
I will be short because I don't talk that long, but I love it. It says my job, and we were going to read something else. I think it's on page 19. I'm not sure. Yeah. And it says my job, and it is a job, and I'm responsible for it. But none of us make a sole vocation of this work, nor do we think its effectiveness will be increased if we did. We feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. And I love that because that is my job. When I'm sponsoring you, I invite you to my home. I invite you to where I work. I invite you to wherever I go. And hopefully you'll see that I can practice this, not just in the meeting, you know, but everywhere else that I go, that I become the authentic person that God wants me to be. You know, I am what I am. And it also says, after all, our problems were of our own making. I used to hate that because I don't want it to be my fault. You know, I really don't. But I understand now, and it goes back to step one. I love being powerless. I love it. I never thought that would happen to me, where I'm not in control anymore. I've got a higher power, a God of my understanding that I walk day by day with. Thank you all. Pass it to Brian.
Thank you. It's funny. So that first line, your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. I think I always read that at first as talking about being in the right place, the right physical place. Mm. So my job was to go to the meetings that had the most newcomers. That's true in some sense that there is a physical location place to it. But more so really is I need to be spiritually in the place where I can be of help to others, because I can show up physically where I'm consumed by self and unable to be of help to anyone, no matter where I am. And that idea that I may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So to go anywhere, if you can be helpful. And there's, you know, there is that the really obvious stuff of, am I of maximum help to the people around me in the fellowship? There might be someone in AA, there might be someone that even on this call, maybe everybody on this call feels like, other than me, I will say, feels like that they really have hit the place where they are just there at their maximum helpfulness to others. I always, always, always have the feeling that there's something more I could be doing. Maybe that's actually a gift. There is no level of contentment where I see myself as, okay, yeah, I'm done now. I am like Bill W. and Dr. Bob combined. But I always see myself as there's so much more I could be doing and trying to find out about. But that's not only in AA. That is in my work. Can I be of maximum helpfulness to others? And I found some of this stuff. Managing large groups of really type A personalities. which is it's sort of like coaching 4-year-old soccer. They all want to do whatever they want to do, and the whole thing is trying to turn this actually into a team, and it's been a great thing. But that gift in AA has been the stuff that I learned here, the stuff that happened here, transformed the way I walk through that portion of my life. It transforms how I, as I'm going to talk about earlier, it transforms how I live in my family. So I'm one of 3 kids. And my sister died in May, and you know, she'd been very sick. She was 58, and she and I had, you know, really close periods of our lives and really distant periods, both drinking and in sobriety. But when she really needed, I was able to be with her the whole time. And I was with her, you know, the night she died. And everything was clear between. I had really bad relationship with my father for a long time, who was an incredibly violent guy to live in a house with. And AA transformed that. And I was able to be of maximum usefulness to him as he got ill, as he lived through his life. And he talked about, before he got really sick, talked about the stuff we had done and how it had been the best thing that happened. You know, and the same thing with my mother. I got to be, you know, the same thing with my wife and my kids. So there was a guy at my house yesterday who's really struggling, an AA guy, you know, able to be there for him. My daughter's struggling with stuff, able to be there for her. There are joys in all of their lives, able to participate. That God gives me the gift of being present, and gives me the way to accept that gift if I'm willing to do it. So, and that's why I see it so important that Sammy goes first, because I'm like such a talker that I'll just keep going. So let me stop, particularly if you, Sammy, or Dave want to jump in and add anything else at the end.
Thank you both so much. Everybody's going to get an opportunity to thank Brian and Sammy again after we say the Lord's Prayer. That was just magnificent. Let me share my screen. I'm going to read the Seventh Tradition card. Do a little business here. The Seventh Tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic. So let's see, we've also got some links in the chat on that regard. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. I'll take a couple of announcements for the good of AA, if anybody has them.
I have one announcement. I do, one quick one. Everybody, March 25th, that weekend of next year, we're going to have David Francis and Brian is going to be our speakers at our Serenity Weekend Conference convention. So I just want everybody to, you can register online already for Serenity Weekend. It's in Williamsburg, and everybody please join us. Thanks.
Thank you, Sammy. And come back next week to Simple Actions. We're having our supper and a speaker, but draw a line through the supper, and we're just going to have a speaker. 7 p.m. we've got John Pine from Speaking of Steps, Richmond, Virginia. He's going to come tell his story next week. That's it. Last call on announcements. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. We're not going to run out of here. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. Or if you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Can we thank the panel again? That was just absolutely sparkling. Wonderful. I love you guys. And Momo Tomo, would you please read the last, technically 3 paragraphs?
Brian, Sammy, thank you so much. That was awesome. This is a vision for you, Big Book, page 164. And I'm Morgan, I'm an alcoholic. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you so much. Thank everybody for taking time and participating in this wonderful meeting. Perhaps we should circle up virtually and virtually hold hands. Feel free to unmute, make it confusing, static filled and noisy and weird, just like me. And we'll have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Lord's Prayer. Who's Father?
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Be thy name.
Be thy name.
Thy kingdom come.
Thy kingdom come.
Thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven.
As it is in heaven.
Give us this day
our daily bread.
Daily bread.
Give us our trespasses. As we forgive those who trespass against us.
Lead us not
into temptation.
Deliver us from evil.
Thine
is the kingdom.
The power, the glory, forever
and ever.
Amen.
Amen.
Woohoo!
Thank you. That was so good.